Hey lovelies, welcome to my channel, Journey and Beyond. Today's guest is a seasoned global technology CEO with over 20 years of experience leading and transforming companies across multiple industries and stages of growth. He has spent more than 15 years as a CEO or general manager guiding organizations with annual revenues ranging from millions to billions. I am thrilled to welcome Sherman today. Let's dive into his incredible journey as a leader and learn about the lessons he is paying forward. Welcome, Sherman. Thank you so much for jumping on a call and welcome to my channel, Journey and Beyond. So tell us about yourself. Let's dive in your childhood. As a kid, did you imagine yourself leading large companies, large organizations, or did that vision evolve over time?
You know, I'd never in my wildest dreams imagined I'd have those opportunities, to be honest with you. I grew up on a farm. I grew up in a very rural environment. I had very limited exposure to technology, to commercialization, to businesses. And so, no, not in the least bit. And I would also say, even as a kid, I didn't have a lot of ambition either. I had a lot of hobbies that I enjoyed doing, and it didn't involve doing things to further my career. I didn't get motivated until college.
So, as a kid, how did you do in school?
I would say before college, I did okay. Actually, it wasn't very challenging. I think I did okay, but I would say it was underwhelming. I was far more interested in sports and having a good time. It was easy. I didn't have to apply myself, and I got out of it what I put in, which wasn't a whole lot. Going into college, though, I had a revelation. I was going to have to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, and I decided to study electrical engineering. And I picked that major because it was where I could make the most money and only go to college for 4 years. And at the time, the market outlook was really good. There was this thing called the computer that was exploding, and everybody wanted to be associated with it. And that's why I chose electrical engineering. It was not for my love of science. It was strictly ROI on investment. And I figured out that I was going to have to really make up for some lost time in high school. So I ended up in my freshman year of college, I had to take a lot of remedial math and writing classes. I'm a very competitive person. I put my competitive energies into that. And I ended up graduating with honors and recognition from two of the Engineering Honor Societies. So I did quite well in college, actually.
Nice. That's pretty honest. That I was not interested in science. It was just attracted me. You have held senior roles at multiple organizations like Seagate, including, you know, overseeing a $4 billion business unit with the ups and downs of running massive organizations. Who or what has been your constant source of strength and support?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm gonna give you a long answer. First of all, I'm very grateful for the time I spent at Seagate. It was a big company. The industry was exploding. A lot of hard work, a lot of risk, but the industry was growing so rapidly. If you just showed up, you could have some success. And over 20 years there, I got to experience various functional leadership roles and got to see just about every aspect of the company before I became a business unit leader. And today, I think everybody takes data storage and they take computing infrastructure for granted. But in the 90s and the 2000s, it was a wild, wild west, and there were a lot of ups and downs. And my life partner, my wife, she's always been my biggest source of strength and support. She's a great listener, but she also doesn't allow me to complain very long before she just tells me to suck it up and deal with it.
Nice. Running multinational companies can be really intense, right? What do you do in your free time to relax, and what hobbies did you enjoy in those days?
Yeah, I without a doubt, my favorite, I love being outside. And so I spent probably, the first 18 years of my life outside a whole lot. And then I spent the next 20-30 years indoors a lot. And so I want to do things that are outside. And today I would say my favorite thing is absolutely relaxing with my family at our lake home. We do a lot of cooking. We have a few beverages. We do a lot of boating, a lot of fishing, a lot of biking. I enjoy pretending I'm a lumberjack. I've got a lot of trees on my property. Sometimes they fall down and I have to cut them up. So I get to use my chainsaw and pretend, doing manual work like that. I enjoy that stuff.
Right. Was there ever a moment in your career you felt like giving up? And if so, what kept you pushing through, you know, during those tough times?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I've had a lot of hard times. I've made a lot of mistakes. I've chased a lot of markets in my career that I've been too early. We were first mover in markets, and when you do that, it takes a lot of money and it takes a lot of time to build a market. I've underestimated the amount of the technology lift it was going to take. In other words, how hard it was, how long it was going to take us. I can tell you without a doubt, the hardest thing I ever did was leading a Series A startup during COVID. That was the last company I was the CEO of. Spent about 6 years, joined the company as they were coming out of their Series A. We raised a couple more rounds and rebuilt the platform, took it from an app to a full-blown platform. And we were like a lot of companies in the, say, pre-COVID era. It was growth at any cost. And we were well-funded. We were spending money very, very aggressively. We're investing even more aggressively. My investors wanted me to go faster than I wanted to go. And what happened was COVID hit us. We had a really enterprise-like sales model. We sold technology into the agriculture space, which means it was a very face-to-face, hands-on selling process. And when COVID hit, we had to stop selling. And so we've got this airplane that's burning a lot of gas. And all of a sudden, and there's one other part of the story. We had an offer on the table, an pending LOI. And so we didn't raise more capital because we didn't want to dilute the company any further. And next thing you know, the world changed overnight. And I would say without a doubt, 2020, 2021 were the two hardest years of my life. And I lost both my parents. They lived a long life, but I still went through that whole thing. And, looking back on it, what kept me pushing through it is my biggest gift, and it's tenacity and grit. And I'm really competitive and probably sometimes to a fault. I probably shouldn't have attempted to do certain things because I should have given up and gone on to something else easier, maybe more reasonable. But for the most part, those traits have served me well. So you got your long answer.
No, thank you for that. You have achieved such great things in your life. You've achieved a great deal in your career. Would you say discipline played a big part in keeping you on track through the challenges?
Very much so. I am very disciplined. I don't need accountability coaches and things like that. I think number one, I'm wired that way. And I think number two, my father really instilled that in me from a very early age growing up on a farm. It's kind of was just built in. And I'd say that, I've learned the hard way that anytime you take a shortcut, it usually leaves you short.
Right. How would you define discipline? Like getting up at the same time, doing workout, going to the work at the same time. How do you cut down on chaos around you?
My wife would say I create the chaos, but I enjoy the chaos, actually. In fact, I get bored if it's not. But I try to always, number one, step back and ask myself what's most important right now. Because as leaders, we all have so much going on. And so when you step back and take inventory of what your priorities are on a pretty regular basis and make that a discipline, then you ask the next question, where am I spending my time? Does my calendar look like what my list of priorities says? And if those two things aren't aligned, then you've got to make some adjustments in your life. And I try to do that on a very frequent basis, daily, weekly. You got to sometimes get quiet and listen and really think about what is, why am I here? What am I really trying to accomplish? And that really helps get you grounded as well.
Right. You've held CEO roles at major organizations, but have you ever considered building your own company from scratch? If not, what has guided your choices?
I had the opportunity, my career has been kind of different than a lot of folks, very untraditional. I started off in a Fortune 200 company. Actually, it wasn't Fortune 200. It became Fortune 200 while the 20 years I was there. But I was in a big company for the formative years of my career. I went from there to a $100 million company, small publicly traded company, CEO of that company. Went from there to a startup with less than $1 million of revenue. And so I've continually, worked on smaller companies. But the first 26, 7 years of my career, I was all trained and became really good at making things bigger, making things better, making things faster. I am someone who can improve on things, and that's my gift. And I can pull people together and make great things happen with a team. What I don't do well is I'm not the inventor. I learned that I'm not the inventor, and I had the opportunity working in a startup where I was around those people. And that's when I realized, my gosh, they are wired very differently than I am. And we're actually very complementary. We sometimes drove each other nuts. I was always trying to make it bigger, better, faster, and they still wanted to keep inventing it. But I am so respectful and so appreciative of what their gifts are. That's not my gift. I think it's one of the most important things a leader has to do is a leader's got to get really good at figuring out what's everybody's genius. What are they really great at? Because a lot of times people on your teams don't understand what their own genius is. And the reason they don't understand it is because they do it so naturally. It's subconsciously for them. And when you as a leader can help someone figure out what their geniuses are and then help put them in a job where they're using those geniuses, man, you unlock something for that person. You've given them a gift. And because they're usually going to be very successful, and they'll remember that you made that difference for them in their career.
Yeah, right. That leads me to my next question. How do you make sure that you set the right tone of culture in the company? What your hiring process look like? What you look in a candidate? And, how do you make sure that the person makes a right fit in your organization?
Yeah, so when I people, and I spend a lot of time working today with a lot of leadership teams on hiring and getting the right people on the bus, like Jim Collins talked about it, that in the book, Good to Great. But I think we become overly dependent on looking at resumes. We look at someone's CV and we ask, okay, what did they study? What kind of grades did they have? We look at what companies did they work at? What kind of positions did they have? What experiences do they have? And those things are all very important. We also look at their track record. I think that's also very, very important. But the part we miss out on are those virtues that really make you a great team player. And as I told you, I don't invent anything. I just take what other people do. So I want a book by Patrick Lencioni. It's called The Ideal Team Player. And he talks about the three virtues of being an ideal team player. Number one, you've got to be humble. You know, without humility, the person is going to be sick to the team. They've got to have hunger, meaning ambition. If you hire someone and they can be the smartest person in the world, but if they don't have desire, if they don't have competitive spirit, if they don't have a growth mentality, they're going to perform at the level that you want them to perform. And you're constantly, as a leader, going to have to jumpstart them every day. And you don't have time for that. You want someone that gets themselves started. And then the last thing he talks about in that model is smart. And by smart, he's not talking about intellect. He's talking about EQ, your emotional quotient. In other words, do you get people? Do you understand how your words, your actions, how does that impact others? And can you read what other people are saying? Can you say the right things at the right time, in the right way? And can you adapt to certain situations? And we've all been around people that can't do that. Well, they can be the smartest and person in the world. And so I spent a lot of time getting good at trying to figure out how, during an interview process, do I uncover those three virtues. And he's got lots of writings on and suggestions on how to do that. And I've become a big student, a big fan of that process.
Good one. Okay, so my next question is, how did it feel when you first became VP at Seagate Technology and later CEO of Kumo? What were some of the defining moments in those transitions?
It's funny you asked that question, because that VP job was the, I'd say still to this day, feels like the biggest milestone for me. Number one, it was a hard position to get in the company. It was a serious validation for me that I had some business skills, and I still didn't understand exactly why I was having success and all of that, but it was a validation at that point. And that point started getting some more confidence. But I can tell you, as I went forward in my career, I can tell you I still had so many moments just self-doubt. Am I a good enough leader? Am I qualified to do this job? Can I pull together a team here? And, I've made it a career out of hiring people that are all smarter than me. That's kind of the way I roll. I always look for the brightest folks, the best ideal team players I can get. And I absolutely expect every person in the room to be smarter than me. And can I pull together this team and be a good leader? And that's always been a concern of mine. And I think I just tell everybody, you just got to fake it until you make it. And the more success you have, the more confidence you get.
How did you conquer your own fears and insecurities that you are not good enough?
I did it probably on a couple of things. One, to a fault, I'm probably afraid of failing. Number two, I have a tremendous work ethic and I outwork everybody else. And number three, I'm very competitive. And so I would say all three of those forces probably came together to lead to some success and survival on top of that through some really tough times.
Good one. Can you tell us about your first experience in leadership role and the mistakes you made to learn from it?
It's kind of embarrassing to even tell you about it. It was so bad. I can tell you. First of all, I told you I was in an industry that was growing very quickly, and I made some decisions really early on to want to get into management early and make a decision to want to go technical in the more of the management side. And I chose to go on the management side because I could move up faster, I thought. And at the ripe old age of 25 years old, I had 9 engineers working for me. And they were, I think the oldest one was older than my dad at the time. And the youngest one was at least 5 to 6 years older than me at the time. And so I had a much more mature group than I was, and I was grossly underqualified. I made so many mistakes in that first managerial role, hiring the wrong people. I hired a guy that, and I told you I was at Seagate for a long time, I hired a person into the company that can remember seeing that person 10 years later and thinking, gosh, I can't believe I brought that guy into the company. He's still here. That was my mistake. The guy's the wrong guy. Shouldn't be here. I can't believe he's still here. So I made mistakes on that. I was a micromanager. I was in a company where I'd say that was part of the culture at the time. And I was a terrible micromanager. I thought I had to know everything that was going on, and I thought I had to be in control of everything. And I didn't understand the difference between management and leadership. I did a very poor job. I mean, I still have the trouble today. I'm very direct. I'm very transparent. But the more senior you become as a leader, you've got to be very good at controlling your emotions. You can't let people tell when you're rattled. You can't overreact. You can't underreact. You gotta maintain it. And so controlling my emotions and being more tactful, being more patient. I was very impatient as a youngster. That's probably the thing I've become best at as I become much more tolerant and much more patient the older I get. I've made so many doggone mistakes as a leader, and I can tell you I got really lucky in my early 30s. Seagate made an investment in me and sent me to leadership school. They sent me to charm school a couple of times too, because I would screw things up. But they sent me to a leadership course, and that's where I first realized that leadership is. It can be a science as much as it is an art. In fact, I don't believe leadership is an art. I believe it is a science. And I believe you can take a good leader and make them a great leader. I think you can maybe take an average leader, and if they've got the desire, you can make them a good leader through training and development and showing them the model and what the right practices are. And coaching. But fortunately, I had that for myself. I was given that opportunity, and it's been critical for me throughout my career.
Right. With the immense responsibility of leading a company, how have you managed to maintain a balance between your work and personal life?
Honestly, not very well. To be honest with you, I haven't done a very good job of that. I'm 60 years old. I went really, really hard for about, until I was about in my late 50s, and I started slowing down now. I used to tell people I only worked half days, which is 12 hours a day. But now I work quarter days. I only work 6 hours a day, but I don't have any secrets. I try to tell people, you got to make sure you got a partner that shares your ambition, that you guys can stay aligned. I wish I could write a book on all the things I wish I'd done differently. I wish I'd spent more time on my health. I wish I had maybe figured out a way to live healthier, more in a more healthy lifestyle. But it always came down to, can I get my job done? Do I want to spend time with my family, or do I want to work on my health, or do I want to sleep? bodies were shortchanged for that whole period of time. But to me, it was work and my family, and that's where I focused. But I can tell you, I've got some regrets on that. I wish I had. If I had the answer, I would tell you. But I would tell people, don't beat themselves up too much. I hear a lot of people saying, "Yo, you can have it all. You can have it all." And all I can say is, good for you. I never figured it out.
You're someone who has achieved so much. What does success mean to you?
Well, early on, it's, you know, say to take the first decade of my career, maybe the first decade and a half, it was titles, it was money, it was recognition, right? It's promotions, and more money that goes with it, stock, all that stuff, financial success, financial security. In the middle of my career, I think it switched more to my team. And I realized that what I truly enjoyed was putting people together on a team and doing something really difficult, together. That's something we couldn't do as individuals, but something we could do together. So it was watching my team succeed is how I define success. And today it's really about legacy and helping people not make the same mistakes that I made, or help them work through some really tough challenges that I've seen before. And so that's what I do with my company now, is I help executives figure out what their gifts are, and I help them reach their full potential.
Well, now we have rapid fire questions. You don't get time to think too much. You just got to answer in one or two words. Are you ready?
I guess so.
Okay. First question is, one word that describes you best.
Gritty.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Play the long game.
One thing you can't live without.
Besides my family, the internet.
Nice. If you could instantly learn one skill, what would it be?
Oh, speak Spanish. I'd like to speak Spanish.
Good one. The best decision you have ever made?
Kind of goes together. It was going into data storage, coming out of college, picking that as opposed to other areas I could have focused on, and getting an MBA versus a master's degree in engineering.
Great. What's your go-to productivity hack?
Well, kind of like what we talked about earlier, which is just ask yourself, what's most important right now, and am I spending my time there? Just clarity check on your priorities and aligning your time.
Nice. What's one trait you think every entrepreneur should have?
Be willing to accept help. Because nice. Sometimes they don't.
Well, I'm always ready to ask for help, like I did. But thank you so much, Sherman. It was fun having a chat with you. And thank you for jumping on a call. And thank you for being on my podcast.
You're very welcome, Shefali. Good luck to you.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for watching my podcast video. I will be very grateful if you can like, share, and subscribe my channel, because it will help me grow. Thank you so much.